12-week programming is up and running. If you're looking for some change, the 12-week Walkers Only program is designed to support you in your process of creating sustainable change. We will help you find meaning, create a better routine, and work on establishing healthy boundaries while setting realistic goals. It includes group sessions, 12-week customized planner, community networking, meet like-minded people, grow personally and professionally, and learn to live with purpose. If that's something you want, then hit us up and let's get you on board.
Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
Don't just talk it, walk it. Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
How are you anyway, brother?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Bit of a head cold, so excuse my nasally voice. That's good to be here, mate. Thanks for having me.
No worries. I'm glad. It's the power of connection, right? Like speaking to Stevie originally. I know Stevie for years, and then coming across you, Cole. We met the other week for a coffee, and I thought, I just instantly were like, this guy's on the same wavelength, you know? And when you get that, you're like, you want to get to know each other more. And I think after, when I left rugby, you kind of look at the bigger picture, not just rugby. And then some people stick in that mold of rugby, of footy, or they evolve as a person. And I felt like when you were talking the other day, you were talking about you want to do acting, or you are doing acting, you're thinking about directing a movie and your podcast, and you're doing a podcast now. And I was like, wow, love this guy. I love this guy's energy. Yeah. He's ambitious. He wants to try things, and he's not scared to try things. When you said literally, if someone will give me a crack in a movie, in a certain movie, I'm going to create the movie. And I was like, that's my guy. Yeah. That's my guy there.
Yeah, man. Yeah, look, I think going straight into sort of professional footy from high school, it's all I ever wanted to do as a kid. And I always identified myself as Corey the footy player. And when you're out of it, you think, can you swear?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Shit, yeah. Shit,
yeah. I thought, shit, what do I do now, man? And it was like a lot of soul searching. And I still haven't found what I really, truly want to do. But what I do want to do is just be me. And I'm still exploring things that sort of fulfill me and give me a bit more purpose. But I think as you get older, footy doesn't really interest me anymore. I went back to Salford last year and was their player welfare manager, which I loved, being around the boys again and, helping those guys and being in that team environment on game day and stuff. But as soon as when they'd warm up for the game, I'd get anxiety and be like, I used to hate this time. I hated it. I hated warming up. I hated getting ready for a match. And then I sort of had to make a decision where I was like, I feel like one of the boys again. And I've just evolved over 2-3 years to not be one of the, I've done that work, and I've been that person. I'd train with them and I'd sort of still have a few skills here and there, and I still think, I could do this. I'll come back. Give us a chance, coach.
Yeah.
My wife would be like, you're an idiot. Shut up. And I would be like, yeah, true. So for me, it's sort of that getting out of there, it sort of reduced that temptation again, reduced sort of going back to identifying as the footy player again.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got a lot more to give myself and my family in other career sort of choices, I guess.
Yeah, wow. That's so true, man. And so many sports and athletes, people in any form of career that's kind of identified them. Do you know what I mean? And I think probably the best thing, like you just said, getting out of that again, because you've like, I've done this work over 2-3 years and now it's like a drug. Do I go back and do that again?
What's the known too? The unknown's always scary.
Yeah.
Known and the safety net was just stay there. Stay in footy. Stay there. That's what I know. It's what I was good at. It's sort of, I know what the boys are like. I know what the system's like. I know what the business is like of it. You have to get out and test yourself and be a bit vulnerable with the unknown. And that's, as scary as it is, it's exhilarating too at the same time.
Yeah, well, it's so scary, but it's so fun when you step into the unknown and then go, wow, that was fun.
Yeah.
Or you go, wow, that was shit.
Yeah.
That's not what I want to do.
Mate, when I retired, I went and worked in the mines in Australia, 800 meters underground. I was like, this is shit.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, but I tried it.
What mine were you in?
Argyle Diamond Mine up northwest Australia. So I did a week on up there and a week back. I only did 3 weeks of it.
When they realize it's not for me.
It's not for me.
People sacrifice so much for that money though, right? Yeah. Like,
and that was the thing. I had a mate who worked there and he got me some tickets and quickly did it. And I said, thanks for the chance, man, but this isn't for me. I'm too soft.
Yeah.
I can't be doing this. But I had a crack and then started doing some construction stuff. Did that for 6 weeks. Wasn't for me.
Mm.
And back in the UK, I had a lot going on personally, divorce, retirement issues, all that stuff, sort of trying to figure it out. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to open up a cafe.
Amazing.
Fuck it. I like coffee.
Yeah.
I like talking to people.
Yeah, you're good at it too.
I'll just open a cafe. So I opened up a cafe in Astley.
Yeah.
No idea what I was doing. Just completely winged it. Had some good people around me that I lent on for support and advice, which was great. It was good. I opened that up in October 2019 and then March 2020, COVID hit. So I had 4 months of regular trading, but we were lucky, you know. We opened up the window outside and we had takeaways and
nice.
We actually went better in COVID due to the being in the community and people, you know, lining up, and it was a cool experience. Then I thought, you know what, it's all right. I opened up a second one in Urmston and I got to the stage where I was 2 years in and I thought, I'm bored of this now. I was at the stage where I was like, right, I'm either going to make it into like a Starbucks or a Costa and go hard.
Yeah.
And that would sort of require investment and a lot more management. And for me, I just wasn't passionate enough about it to take it to that next level.
Yeah.
And I made a decision to sell up and love my time, met some amazing people. Mm. And the cafe's called Jacora, which was Jack's Corey Aura.
Nice.
Me and my two kids. That's still there today. And, you know, my kids can look at it on Wednesday and go, oh, that's when Dad started the cafe about us one day.
Wow.
So that's a little bit of, you know, for the kids that if it's still going in 10 years' time, they can say, oh, my dad started that for us.
Yeah,
well. Even though I don't own it, it is what it is.
Yeah, but you started it.
Yeah.
So someone bought the name.
The business, yeah.
Wow.
Naming rights and all that. So
that's pretty cool. But like, okay, you recognize it's enough now in this industry. Someone bought it off you. So still, you like you said, you drive past it, the kids see it, and you go, dad's done that work. And you can kind of be proud of that as well, because I think in the sports environment, you know, every day you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, like this is your niche. Like it's like you're going into training, there's not that fear anymore. That's comfortable now.
Unless you got wrestling or fitness and I was terrified.
Yeah. As a halfback, I always used to give the guys a wink and be like, listen, easy on me. Yeah, I don't want to.
Gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. There's so many little agreements in it. If the coach walks past a training and he says, and he's like, you're wrestling and then, you know, he's not looking. You're like, rest, chill.
Another 60 minutes of this, just take it easy.
No, but it's pretty cool, man. And I love the fact that people just keep trying and trying until they find what they want. And I heard it once and I totally agree with it, is like, if you were to go in your own business, you actually generally got to love it, because if you don't love it, it's not going to last. And like you said, you got to that marketing stage or next stage of, you know, and you were like, I don't love it enough to... And that's amazing, because so many people are just stuck in that little rut of doing something because it's a means to an end, it's an income. And yeah, and I don't think that's a life of purpose. You need to have purpose in life. And even when you went back to, you know, that change of breakup as well, having a breakup with ex-partner, I think everyone needs to experience one.
Yeah.
Like the heartbreak of it, the growth of it as well. Like I think after every breakup, I think I've learned more about myself and gone and like doubled down on myself more.
100%.
Do you know what I mean?
I just think, yeah, you sort of play the victim or the victor. Mm. And for me, you know, there was two kids involved.
Yeah.
In a different country with no friend, no family. but I just think back to how would they want him to behave? Yeah. And like I did far out, man. I did months of deep work on myself and physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, all of it. I just went, I was like a hobbit, man. Yeah. Like I just bunkered down. And it's one of those things, man. Like I knew it was time, you know. Growing up, I had two parents that, you know, obviously loved each other, but as soon as all the kids were out of the home, they got divorced.
Yeah, well.
So for me, I was like, I'd rather my kids have two happy homes rather than one that's just putting up for the sake of
putting for the sake of it, yeah.
Because kids can read that stuff, man. Kids can understand when mum and dad don't get along, or there's, you know, pick up on energy, vibrations, all that stuff.
It's true.
Depends how deep you want to go into it. But so now my kids, they see me with my wife now, who I'm absolutely besotted with and madly in love with, and they can now see my daughter knows how a man should treat a woman. Mm. My son knows that that's how a man should treat a woman.
Yeah.
And it's not fake. It's not made up. It's genuine. Yeah. I couldn't fake my love for her. You know, it is what it is, and vice versa. So for me, I feel like I'm setting a better example, even though it was hard, you know, breaking up a family dynamic. And again, it's the unknown.
Yeah.
I was 31, 32 with two kids, washed up rugby league player. Who's going to want me? Bald, you know, wasn't in my best nick, like in terms of physically. So I was like, shucks, I'm going to have to change something. I'm going to have to become the best man I can be physically, mentally, spiritually, all that. And lo and behold, I meet my now wife.
Yeah.
And it's like the universe was saying,
yep,
that's not rewarding me, but saying this is what you deserve now.
So true. That's so many things in that you just said. For instance, one of them, you know, the fear of the unknown. How many people do we know are still in relationships because of the fear of being alone or not finding someone better? That's one. And then two, you know, there's so many people out there that go, you know, oh, I want this person, I want that person. But, you know, instead of expecting this person, like, work on yourself first, because the person you are is the person you're going to get.
Yeah, man.
I know. And so many people go, oh, I want that 10, I want this, I want the nice hair, the boobs, whatnot. They're like, hang on, you're
biggest can't be two, yeah. Bro. If you're sitting at a 3, you're not getting a 10, man.
Yeah. You're at a 3 right now, brother. Like, let's wipe the shit out of your eyes. Come on. But it's true. And it's amazing, because it's so many people are stuck in that position. And to hear you in that now and go, man, I genuinely love my wife, and my kids see that person, a happy dad. Yeah, might not be with mum, but I want that happiness, you know. They want to look to the everyone looks up to their parents. So at some stage, I looked up my dad, you know, until you get to an age where you go, you know, I've got to find my own steps and walks in life.
Yeah, I heard a quote that life's a balance between making things happen and letting things happen. And that's something I really live by now. Mm. You know, you talk about trying to find a new partner. You can't make a girl fall in love with you, your dream girl. But at the same time, you can't sit in your room and expect her to walk through your door.
Yeah.
So it's a balance act. And I can't control... Well, I couldn't control my future wife falling in love with me.
Mm.
I can't make that happen. But what I can control is being the best Corey I can be.
100%.
In all aspects. So that's sort of making it happen in terms of what I can control. But then I had to let the universe let it happen.
Mm.
And, you know, thankfully we found each other. It was in the singles game. My first date I went on, I got catfished. Yeah.
Oh, no, the filters
I
got online.
Catfished. And I was like, shucks, I'm 32. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I've been in a relationship for the last 10 years, pretty much my whole adult life.
Mm.
Get on a date and I got catfished. I was like, shucks. Then Emma rocks in, and I first thing I thought was, yes, she didn't catfish me. She actually looks like it. So yeah, man.
It's amazing.
It just, and you know, people say time heals everything, but I think it's the time you put into yourself.
Mm.
It could be 6 months, 6 years, but if you don't do the work on yourself, time becomes irrelevant.
Do you think that as well, because transition out of footy as well at the time, there's a lot of things happening too?
Yeah, man. Like, when I retired, I thought I had my shit together.
Mm.
I'm going to be sweet. I'm going to be fine. But there's so much stuff that I didn't account for in terms of, you know, loss, in terms of you don't have – every day you go to training, you have a laugh.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Yeah.
You're either laughing at someone or laughing at someone laughing at someone.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always some humor.
Yeah.
There's a camaraderie. And that was probably the biggest thing I felt, the loss of that. You know, now you're by yourself.
Mm.
You don't have that laugh. You don't have that camaraderie.
Yeah.
I didn't count for that. You'd wake up and then you're like, what am I doing today? Shit, and I got no purpose.
Mm.
Well, I'll train later. You're not forced to train. So then physically you start to not deteriorate, but you're not as you know, fit as you used to be.
Mm.
So all these things start creeping in, and before you know it, you're 6 months down the line, you think, you look in the mirror and you're a shell, physically, mentally, emotionally, you're a shell. And so how can I be the best partner, husband, friend, if I'm not even happy with myself?
So true.
So it was a big slap in the face, but it's a slap in the face I needed and I'm grateful for, because it's brought me so much joy and so much happiness in my life now.
Well,
you know, so
it's one of those, hey, you look within, you gotta look, keep looking within, and then something happens. Like, it's like I tell some people so many times that, like, so you know when you do change, right, you get change, and when normally when you try to do something new, if that's weight loss or if that's a new path, you'll get like, you get fixated on at the start and you get motivated by the change. Then after a while, after that part of change, you'll like kind of plateau or kind of like level out again, and there's nothing happening. Like if you're losing weight, you might just stop for a bit and stop not losing weight. You're just in that middle. And a lot of people in that obstacle, then they kind of just drop. They go back to an old habit, like sabotage themselves and go back to the start.
Back to the known.
Yeah, yeah, back to the known. And then it's like, but if you just keep turning up and working on, if it's working on yourself or if it's losing weight or whatever it is, you know, something, it's like another breakthrough happens again. And we've all been there, where I've been there, where it's just like, you know, it's not, nothing's happening. Okay, I'm going back on out on the boys on the weekend again, yeah, and chasing it, chasing tail, you know. And it's interesting, man, that every walk of life, everything's you know, it all connects. But in saying that, man, you've had an extraordinary career. You know, obviously, like you said, went straight into first team, playing over in the NRL, and then coming over to Super League. You started off at, you've born, Perth born, aren't you?
Yeah.
Perth,
yeah,
born. That's rare for Perth boy playing league, isn't it?
Yeah, so I was born there, but we moved to Brisbane when I was 2 or 3.
Okay.
Because my dad was in the army, so we got posted around a lot. So
Inaugura, was it Inaugura?
Inaugura, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Inaugura Barracks, yeah.
Yeah.
So I first started playing footy in for West Mitchelton.
Really?
Yeah, in, wow, Brisbane. I remember playing barefoot, and I was 4. And I only had under sevens then, so I was 4. And I was the worst. I scored one try, but it was in the other way, and I was awful. So I did that for 2 years, and I was awful. And then we moved to Canberra, and I had under sixes, and I was 6 then.
Mm.
And I actually became all right at it. I was like, well, I've been the worst kid on the team for the last 2 years playing year. Under sixes, yeah, became all right. Then we moved to Sydney for a couple of years. Then we moved back to Perth when I was 11 or 12, and just playing local league there. And we had a state carnival, playing for WA. And when I was 15, Warren Smiles from the Knights said, oh, mate, we want to put you on like a scholarship. I was like, what's that? He goes, oh, we just give you some gear. I was like, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll have the gear. And he goes, you can come over and have a camp every now and again. I was like, sweet. So I did one more year back in Perth, and then I moved. I was like, I'm moving. So when I was 15 or 16, I packed up, left home, left mum, dad, left friends, everything.
Wow.
And moved to Newcastle.
Solo, on your own?
Solo, by myself.
Wow.
I lived with Jared Mullen and his family.
Wow.
For a year. And then I played SG ball. Again, I went from a big fish into a small pond. Small fish in a big pond to Newcastle, where every game for the Knights under 18s, I wore number 20.
Really?
Every game. I was like, man, I must be shit.
Questioning.
Yeah, doubting myself. And then the following year, played under 18s again and went okay. That year, I ended up playing Australian schoolboys.
Yeah.
Which was huge honour.
Who was the team players in your team, in the schoolboys team then? Anyone that's...
Yeah, we had Darius Boyd, Mitchell Pierce, Jared Mullen, Aku Yawate, Michael Jennings.
It's a gun team.
Yeah, we had a good team. We played New Zealand twice, beat them once, lost once. And then on the back end of that, the Knights said, well, you've done that, which is great. You can train part-time with first grade, reserve grade in the off season. I was like, oh, awesome. 17, 18, got to train part-time, so here and there. It's like, great. And I just sort of found my rhythm, found my groove in that preseason, and then I played a bit of Jersey Flag, which is under 20s at 18, and then I played a few 10 reserve grade games, which was massive for me because, you know, there was NRL players dropping down and coming back from injury, and I was playing against them. And at the end of that season, played Junior Kangaroos, and then they said, right, well, you can train full-time with the first grade team. I'm starting to get there now. Start to feel like these little bits of faith that the club's putting in me is happening now. It's sort of made the move worthwhile. And then round one, NRL debut.
Wow.
There we go.
Round one.
Yeah. And I was like, let's do it. Bulldogs at home, Sonny Bill, Willie Mason, Marco Mealy,
wow.
Roy Satasi, Andrew Ryan. I was terrified.
Yeah, wow.
But good fun.
How did you boys get off?
Yeah, we won.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, we won.
How do you, for all these youngsters coming out, coming through now, like playing against those players at that age, how, what advice would you give to someone who's making their debut? Like the nerves, the emotions, yeah. What advice would you give to
embrace
someone?
Embrace it.
Yeah?
Don't try and not be nervous. Don't try and embrace it. Be excited. You know, that for me was a dream since I was 4 or 5 years old. And it's something that I'll forever cherish and just enjoy it.
Wow.
You know, like, because you might only get one game. You know, I played with a few guys that only have had one NRL game.
Mm.
And they say, I wish I enjoyed it more.
Appreciate the moment.
Appreciate it and be grateful for the moment. Because you might only get one.
Yeah.
You know, just enjoy it, man. Enjoy it because you've worked hard to get there and you deserve to be there. In professional sport, there's no charities.
No.
You're there to do a job. It's a result-based industry. Mm. You're not there because the coach feels sorry for you or because the coach likes you more than the next bloke. There's no charities in sport. So you deserve to be there when you get your crack.
Yeah, wow. That would have been like a massive relief. And that squad as well, like you said, the halfbacks then. Did you have – was Mullins was one of the halfbacks for Newcastle. Yeah, who's the other halves then?
Andrew Johns.
Oh. Oh. You got the bloody immortal.
Yeah.
What's he like as a person, Andrew Johns?
I was only a kid, mate, when I had stuff to do with him. So he was like an idol and he was good to me. I remember we played Canberra a couple of rounds later and offloaded the ball and I can't remember who it was, came up the inside and he dropped it. And Joe's come over and give me a bigger spray. You effing and Joe, you yeah, blah, blah. Like, wow. Give me a spray. I was like, terrified. I said, sorry, Joe. And anyway, 10, 20 minutes later, whatever, it was just instinctively, I did the same thing. But I can't remember who, I think one of the boys caught it and scored on the post and Joe's come over and jumped into my head. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. I was like, nothing changed from me really.
Yeah.
It just, but that's how competitive he was and that's how much of a desire to win he had. And yeah, it was an amazing to play with your idol and your hero growing up. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's, wow. That's amazing. Like, he's like, man, I love watching his highlight reels. And just, I think I obviously like his brother on team, Matty Johns. He's unreal. He's funny though.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like one thing you did then though, like you did a play, made a mistake and then you went again. Mm-hmm. Like I did the same thing again. Like, it's funny, right? I've spoken about this and I don't know if it's an Aussie thing. Well, it might be an Aussie thing, but where you guys embrace like those 50-50s. Like if you see something on, do it.
Mm.
And if you do it and it doesn't come off, it's like, yeah, you'll get that, but it doesn't hold you back from doing it again. And I don't know how to explain it, but I just see it so much where when I was in Australia playing, everyone just seemed to like back each other. Like if you threw a cutout pass and it worked, everyone's cheering. If you threw a cutout pass, you'd be like, all right, next job.
Yeah.
And over here, sometimes I feel like we're very like, fuck up. The next thing is, all right, complete the next set with. But don't do like 4 hit-ups or five hit-ups and a kick. Like, you know, it's like takes the confidence out of some people. Like, you know, or depends how young you are. How old are you when you did that pass with Joey Johns on you? Like
19.
Yeah. So many people have gone, I did that once. If I do it again, I'm getting dropped. You know,
it's instinct, eh? I think it comes from when you're a kid playing in the park.
Mm.
Just the shackles are off. I think too, when you get into a stage of the NRL, defenses are so hard to break.
Yeah.
So you've got to try stuff. Everyone knows the shapes. Everyone knows how to defend.
Mm.
You know, I don't know a stat, but I'd assume a high percent of tries come off offloads or second phases.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because defenses are so good. It's hard to break them down. So you have to you have to try things and express yourself that might not necessarily be normal structure type thing.
Yeah. You're a... Because you played a couple positions, right? You chucked in the halves a bit now and then.
Oh, makeshift.
Yeah, yeah. But like on the edge as well and stuff like that. But you're a ball player as well. And we talk about this a bit. And that's why I'm wearing the t-shirt today, Deadly Choices. This has come over all the way over to the UK with me. But I found out the other day when you said, you know, you play for Indigenous All-Stars. And I was like, wow. And I was talking about the times when in Australia where like the most gifted players I've always had always the Indigenous players or the, you know, Indigenous or Torres Strait Islanders. And I used to go like, I'd look at them physically and I'd be like, no way. you know, and then next thing you know, they just see them on the field and I'll be like, oh my gosh, like it's like you are inbred, like DNA'd in you, sorry, footy is your thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the offloading comes off, or like you'll just try things out of the norm. Look at Matty Bowen.
Yeah.
Like you played at the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And you said your edge at one stage was full you know, yeah. Indigenous players. And
it was JT, Mango, that's it, Jonathan Thurston, Matty Bowen, Willie Tong and myself. It's like, I literally had to do nothing, man.
Yeah.
They just said, JT would say, run there, run there. And then those fellas would do everything else around me.
Wow. It's mad, that, isn't it? Like, yeah. What do you think it is? What do you think it is that they've just, look at Bev and French now.
I just think it's instinct. I think it's, as soon as you're a kid, you've got a ball or an old Coke bottle or something, and you're flicking it and you're kicking it. And yeah, I just think it's probably instinct and it's just ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And, you know, footy and AFL in Australia, it's just, I think, you know, hand-eye coordination is something that we're quite, you know, fortunate enough to have. And but I think that's sort of grown through your childhood of what you're, you know, in Australia, you sort of, you play every sport, you do everything. Basketball, cricket, AFL, surfing, swimming, like you're just always doing something. So I think that automatically enhances your hand-eye skill, your feel for things. And I don't really know the scientific answer.
Maybe that's the you know, the unknown is what people see in it, you know.
By Solid Erections Carpentry, whether it's a door hanging, a deck building, a full renovation, they do it all in a timely and an efficient manner. Working to a budget within your guidelines, they complement the look of your home in a matter of weeks. Then check out the team at Solid Erections Carpentry, who are based in Brisbane.
I think I've always been curious. So, I've always been like interested. So I was there 11 years, and I've always been interested in other cultures. And when I was over there, really big, like Polynesian culture, you know, Maori culture, and then I was like, I didn't know too much about Aboriginal culture, you know, and I was very fortunate when I originally went over there. I went to Ipswich Jets and we had Ian Lacey and Kieran Lander there, and they started the brand, I believe, Deadly Choices. So Deadly Choices, if you're looking at this, bring
send
me over.
Send some more gear.
Send some more gear over
extra
here, right?
Yeah.
Stop giving me the big shit too. No, but they were so passionate about it, and we had people like... oh, I don't know if you know him, Donald Malone there, Javon White, Brendan Marshall. And I was just, and Wes Conlon, there's loads of them. I'm probably missing a few. And Billy McConaughey. And they were all the nicest people ever, always laughing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to know more about this culture. But it was so, not hidden, but you had to go searching for it a bit. Mm-hmm. The only way I would know about these games was Indigenous rounds.
Yeah.
Or, speaking to Lace or Kieran Lander, but they were really big in that team Ipswich Jets in the Murrays up there in Queensland. Yeah. And like they would bring guys from out west and just bring them in because they knew they were instinctively good the way they played. But yeah, like I think we speak about it a bit because obviously you played in the Indigenous round and Indigenous All-Star game. What was that like?
Amazing. It was one of those things, like I remember playing with all these great players and just thinking, do I belong here? Like these guys are superstars. Wendell, JT, you know. I remember we had a team do the night before the game, and Sammy Thaiday stood up, took his shirt off. He's got a tattoo on his chest that says, "One brother bleeds, all brothers bleed."
Wow.
And he goes, "I'll die for you boys. I'll bleed for you boys if you do the same for me." And I was like, far out. No one's beating us, man. And Sammy killed it that game. I just remember Sammy making like 50 tackles on the line, like just going absolutely bananas. And you know, Gordon Tallis was in one of our star, Cliff Lyons. We just had such a good bond. Like you put 20 brothers together and then all the staff as well. It's like we just had the best week, like second All-Stars of the year or the third. Andrew Fifita. He was being a pest as he always is, and I threw my thong or my flip flop over here. And where we were staying was like the elevators, and it goes round.
Yeah,
and he's been a pest. So he ran off and he tried to dack me in the elevator or something. And I threw my flip flop around the corner. It was like a boomerang. It turned around and it cracked him in the back of the head. And he goes, "Pada!" Just stuff like that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Just so much fun. Like, I remember playing with Greg Inglis was my center, and I was like, I said, "What do you want?" He goes, "Just give me the ball." I was like, "Sweet, here you go, Greg. Go do your thing." And Justin Hodges on the other side. It's just like these are guys that you idolize and respect so much. But then getting to know them as men, it's just amazing, mate. It was the best camps I've been in.
It's pretty interesting. Like you just said, then just give me the ball. Like
not an arrogant way.
No, but
just give me the ball and I'll have a crack.
Many people like get to this spot to play this spot to do this spot, and
there's no game plan for us.
Let's just get the ball and give it to them and see. Like they instinctively, like you said, you instinctively. And do you think that's a lot of where your style comes from? Like, you know, of just playing a bit more off the cuff?
I was always, if the coach gave me a direction and thing I needed to do, I'd always do it.
Mm.
But then 9 times out of 10, if I did something that was off the cuff, it was just, I didn't even think about it.
Mm.
I wouldn't think, I would just flick it or kick it or try something. And the coaches I have always had have always been quite understanding of that.
Mm.
So it's always been, I've always had full opportunity to express myself, which I was always grateful for.
So if you don't mind me asking, as well, obviously you've been Indigenous, but like light skin, there's a song right by this guy called TG North, and he says he's basically, I believe he's Indigenous but Polynesian, but he says, "I'm too black for the polys and too poly for the blacks." And I always think, do people ever get stuck in the middle? But they do. But, you know, they don't know if they're quite accepted by some mobs because of that, and other mobs don't, you know what I mean? And you're not, you know what I mean? Like,
No, I get it, man. And for me, I was always taught early doors that it doesn't matter what other people think. And there's a saying, it doesn't matter how much milk you put in coffee, it's still coffee.
That's true.
And I know my father and his family, and I know where I belong, and I probably am not as dark as others, but I know a lot lighter Aboriginal people than me. So for me, it's not about trying to fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I need to belong. I fit in with my family and my mob and my people. They accept me and my family, and that's all that matters to me. I don't need to get anybody else's approval.
I love that, man. I love that. And that comes again, comfortable
in my own skin.
Yeah, man.
I'm not the darkest, but I know that my father, my grandfather, my parent, my grandparents, I know who they are and what they've gone through and what they've done for me to have the life I have today.
Yeah. Definitely, I'd love to, like, I know this education side of it is getting more, it's becoming more educated. People are on the history of it all, and I don't know, obviously, the people I've had surrounding me in Australia, a lot of Indigenous people, and I've always turned like just empathy to the culture and the history, and it obviously is a bit of sadness, but I reflect and like we can't sit in that sadness for too long. Be like, well, what can we do moving forward? There's, you know, westernized culture and a Indigenous culture over there, but I'm always intrigued in that aspect. But going back to footy, man, like, obviously, after your journey, obviously went from Newcastle to Cowboys. And then from Cowboys then to West.
Yep.
And then overseas.
Overseas.
Wow. What was I know we only briefly talked on the Cowboys, but you enjoyed it up there?
Yeah, I did. I sort of had a lot of injuries, and it wasn't probably, in terms of performance, I could have done better. But for me, I was just like, I got released from Newcastle, and that sort of sucker blowed me a bit.
So what happened?
A new coach came in, wasn't part of the plans. Standard stuff, you know, but I'd done nearly 100 games for him, and I was playing all right. And then, so these things happen, but it took me a while to get over it, and I sort of sulked a bit.
Yeah.
I was immature, and hindsight, I should have been a lot more mature and sort of played the victor rather than the victim so much.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't showing that, and I was still training hard and doing everything, I think subconsciously I was still like, should never let me go, blah, blah, blah. But it is what it is. That's sport. And then I had a heap of injuries, and it just sort of, you know, I would have loved to have probably played more and been more influential up there, but it's the way it is. Sometimes you can't win them all. Still had some amazing times, met some amazing people, still played some big games. Yeah, probably being a proud man, I'll probably want a bit more.
Yeah, that's the competitive side as well. And so knowing that I've never been to your level, Cole, but when I go, I feel like some people out there sometimes are always trying to prove to people we're enough. And I think that comes from sports.
Massively.
Like not getting selected, not getting renewed contracts, injuries, trying to prove again constantly. And then I reckon the first year out of rugby, I was like, who am I trying to prove to? Yeah. Like, because it's wider than us.
Yeah,
you know, you're trying to prove to someone. It's like a validation from a coach to be picked for the next week. And
well, my first game for the Cowboys was against Newcastle.
Oh.
And I scored the match-winning try, and I carried on like a dickhead.
Oh, wow.
And I regret it so much. And it wasn't to the fans, it wasn't to anything, but it was to the new coach coming in and the new owner coming in. And I regret it because it was on the front page of the paper, like me going like that. And I was like, it was a long time ago now, 12, 13 years ago. But I was like, young idiot Corey, learned never to do that again. And I'm embarrassed of that. But in the heat of the moment, trying to prove someone wrong, so much passion and so much point to prove. It's like looking back, I'm like, you're a dickhead. But it's happened and I've learned. I've never done it again. But I was like, far out, just young, dumb, and point to prove.
But it's like that, eh? We all have that bit of, I want to prove that guy wrong.
Yeah, 100%.
Imagine scoring the match winner.
Yeah.
I think 90% of people would gone.
Oh, yeah.
Give you the two fingers,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, I was close to doing that, but my son was in the crowd. Like, shit.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, look, it is what it is.
How many years were you at the Cowboys for?
Two.
Good times up there.
Yeah, I loved it, mate. Like, great club, great people up there.
What's that club called up there? Everyone goes to
I never went.
Townsville. What's it called? I'm trying to think what it's called in Townsville the night out there. Mad Cow. Yeah. Never went, mate. I don't know.
So the boys used to talk about it all the time. I never went.
Played against Blackhawks up there. And yeah. Jesus, a night out.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't know. Yeah. So just what the boys would talk about the next day.
Yeah. Oh, mate. That's cool. That's cool. I like that. And then after that, you said West Tigers.
Yeah. Which is weird because I went from Newcastle and the Cowboys being one town, one team, to the Fishbowl of Sydney. It was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't really like living in Sydney. Like I said, I was used to sort of the Newcastle and Townsville being towns rather than big cities.
Yeah.
So I didn't really like that. But again, played with some awesome guys and awesome people. And
yeah.
Still loved it, still enjoyed it. And I busted my hand pretty good. So I was out for 3 months. I was just finding real good form.
Yeah.
So I only signed a 1-year deal there. I was finding some real good form. Played the Sharks at Shark Park. We won. Played really well. Started talking negotiations. But after that game, my hand was all messed up. And then that week, I had surgery. 3 months, my hand was gone. And then they did what any business would do, lowball you with the offer.
Yeah, well, yeah. So you either stay on that or
just don't take it personal. It's business.
Show your hand for a minute. I can see your finger. So that's your hand straight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
Rugby league wins again.
Yeah, yeah. They don't tell you about the injuries you get after a career, hey?
So, and then came over to the UK after that. Thought my mum's English. So I've got a British passport.
Amazing.
Been here ever since.
Yeah. You like, because we spoke about this the other day in coffee. You love it here, hey? Like, like so many times it goes the other way where people, you know, they hate the cold, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I just think I've put some good roots down here. You know, my wife's English now. My daughter was born here. My son has a full English accent. I've got probably closer friends here now.
Yeah.
Just because I've been here for 7 years, 8 years now. So it's been a big chunk of my adult life. I've been here now. I know the weather. It doesn't shock me anymore.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, shit, it's cold. I know what's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So that initial shock's gone. I know, you know, there's opportunities to travel Europe and things like that, which is on your doorstep. So I just, I feel like there's good opportunities here.
Yeah. I actually agree with you there. Like, again, we were speaking about this. Coming back now, I've already booked 2 trips away.
Yeah.
But I speak to mum. And they're like, we haven't gone away in ages. I'm like, the flights are cheaper here. Like, we've got all Europe next door to us. I think because, and I'm just like, opportunities, get out, go.
Yeah, well, I remember when I first came, one of the boys, I said, oh, have you ever been to London or Paris? And he was like, English guy, no, why would I go there? why wouldn't you? It's an hour flight or a 3.5 hour drive.
I know, right?
Why would I go there?
Yeah, wow. Bonkers, mate. What was your biggest change, like, you know, like, knocked you back a bit from Australia to here? What, besides the weather, obviously, what was the other thing that kind of, whoa, like, that's different here, or that's good, I like this?
I think for me, coming from sort of the NRL being number one or two biggest sports in Australia, to coming here where the Super League's a little bit further down, you know, behind football and, and things like that. I think the anonymity, is that word? You know, just play your game.
Yeah.
Don't worry about anything else. That was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, just coming over here and just doing what I love without the bullshit that came with it in Australia.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
Imagine if that Joe Weston thing was in the NRL.
He'd be living in the bush somewhere. He wouldn't.
He played round one. Yeah. How the heck did that
happen? Sacked and never to play again.
It's just like.
Yeah.
You see, I don't know if you've seen it over there, but Payne Haas had a bit of a scrap with Albert Kelly.
Yeah.
But like it was over, like apparently it was over him standing on his shoes and he pushed him. But like that got in the paper, he got a fine for that. You've got Lincoln Westham and down an alleyway. And it's just bizarre to think that they're cutthroat. But I just seen in the news that they're refusing to sign this new contract or something in the NRL because of maybe the fine system. I think David Mead spoke about it before to me where, but if you ever get banned for a game or fined, you say it's nearly half your wage gone now. It's bizarre. Yeah. By the time you get taxed.
Yeah. I don't follow it a lot. Because I'm not that I'm not interested in it, but I'm just like sort of in the past. But I have touched up a little bit on it. And what I understand, players aren't greedy.
Mm.
But they aren't going to be suckered into unfairness. You know, there's so many more educated footy players now, you know, with degrees and eloquent speaking and actually business brains, which is awesome to see, you know. So I think once those numbers came out in terms of Origin revenue and all this, the boys just want what's fair.
Yeah.
And that's nothing wrong with asking for that, you know. So I'll always err on the side of the player.
Yeah.
Because I was one.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything to do with the other, like the business side. Mm. So I'll always back the player. But yeah, the fine system for me is a bit, you know, you're sort of guaranteed a contract when you're playing.
Yeah.
And then for an accident, high shot or something, you might get $1,000 or pounds or whatever. You're like, well, I might not be able to pay my mortgage.
Yeah.
I've got three kids and a wife that we need that $1,000 because that's £250 a week to pay for groceries.
100%.
Like, take the game suspensions.
Yeah.
Don't livelihood. If you bring the game into disrepute by being a dick, you deserve to get fined.
100%.
Because you're making yourself look like a dick and also the game sponsors, I get that. But if you accidentally put a lazy arm out with no malice or no intention, come on.
Yeah, 100%.
Would the boss of the RFL or NRL give himself £1,000 fine for sending the email to the wrong person?
Wrong guy or spelling the name wrong in the email or something,
What the F?
No chance.
That's my point on it.
It's about accountability, though, isn't it? Yeah. You know, if you're willing to do it to them, then you've got to be accountable in yourself. And
I think the boys now realize that they are the talent, they are the product. And without being egotistical about it, you know, without them, there's no NRL, there's no RFL. Mm-hmm. And you get the other side of the thing. Yeah, without the fans and without this, 100% I agree.
Mm.
Without the sponsors, I agree. These boys will still be playing park footy.
Yeah.
And you'll just be paying 10 quid to watch them rather than 30 quid in front of a big state. You'll be watching them in Wigan or in Penrith on the park.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you think this is entertainment because it's an entertainment industry.
Mm.
You want to be entertained. That's why you save up.
Exactly. So
go pay and watch it because you want to be entertained. You want to take your mind off the bullshit that's gone on in the week and support your team.
Mm.
For 2 hours, you're there, you're embraced in it. It's the whole thing with the Romans and the gladiators. How do we distract the masses? Putting on sports events.
Yeah.
You know, this is it now. Like, unfortunately, you get paid to do what you love, which provides for me and my family did. But also these fans that come are so embraced in it and love it. So it gives them an outlet too. It's a win-win. Now, there's a common denominator here that the issues are coming from the person in the middle.
Yeah.
The fans want it, the players want it, but it's the people who control it that seem to always be the one interfering with it.
Well, even just seen the other day, like I think I seen Sean O'Loughlin and Tommy Lulawai played rugby union.
Yeah.
So like you just said, I get it, they're retired now, but they're like, they're going to have a run local. It doesn't bother them. Yeah. It's not the money, it's the fun that gives them, you know, exactly. And it's... People, I bet they had the best turnout of that ground.
I bet they did.
filled the field, probably sold out big time. But it's pretty cool, man. And a few things you said today, like, has just resonated with me and probably hopefully other people. Where you said, like, you know, just going back to the other end of it, where you're talking about trying a load of things. Like, people come out of the sport now, cool. Like, you know, the money is pretty good in sports, and then obviously. Coming out of that sport, you might not make that much money at the start, so you've got to try and find it, be willing to try. And like, again, needs to be more people like that out there, just constantly trying to find what they're good at, you know.
I just don't want to waste mine or other people's time or energy by being half-assed at something.
Mm.
You know, like, if I'm going to do it, I want to go all in, because I'm too competitive and too proud to not give my all. Mm. You know, so I'm a bit of a weird. I do a point system in my head. So if I get an opportunity or something, or something comes up where it might jeopardize what I determine to say success, say if it's going out with the beers the night before a game, well, if I buckled into that, that's 1 point to failure.
Mm.
If I don't do that, it's 1 point to success.
Yeah, yeah.
So now in my head, I think like, right, what do I want to do? Digging holes 800 meters underground, that's about 1,000 points to failure. If I do something I actually enjoy, that's points to success and fulfillment. So in my head, I've got these constant scoreboards going on by every action that I sort of do.
Yeah.
You know, coming on this podcast, that will score us to positive.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
You know, and ultimately I'm on the side of success and fulfillment, so I'm competitive, so I want that guy to win rather than failure or take the piss or take waste time.
Mm.
So in my head, I've got a constant game going on in my head because I'm, you know.
So true.
But it's like, just have a crack. Like, honestly, you have nothing to lose.
I love that, though. Like, that's the best way to be. I always tell people, do things from a good place and good things happen to you. Like, selfless acts make selfish measures. Mm. So just doing good for the world. And I think so many people are obviously driven by money. But it's like, I think sometimes you've got to see past the money to see, like, to see the bigger picture. Like, that will come if you pursue something like the unknown. Yeah. Going into the unknown and, man... Even doing this now, like, when I started it, I literally just knew I had a vision in my head, knew I wanted to do something, and it was in Australia. I was like, that's it. I'm going to just pay 6 months rent. Mm-hmm. I had a house that I didn't live in that I would mortgage on it, and I was just living in the rental, 6 months rent, paid that front, and I just tried to figure this journey out. Mm. Went back loads of times, but I just kept turning up, and I'm like, okay, now we're making an income. Now at the next stage, now how can we get to a stage where it's livable? Next thing then, how do I get to a stage then where I'm like, you know, because it's never ending line of where you want to go, but I'm still nowhere near where I want to go. But I'm very grateful that I sacrificed 6 months of zero income to invest in myself.
Yeah, man.
Imagine doing 10, 12 hours digging out in the mines and then coming home for like 2 hours going, I haven't even got the energy to think now. I'm cooked.
You're done, yeah.
I know, and people don't, you got to invest in ourselves.
100%, I think. Joe Dispenza says it best. He's like, we always remember our past, and we're tied to those emotions and those feelings and thoughts of the past. But if you can remember your future, what he doesn't know, the difference between if it's real or fake.
Yeah.
So I always try and remember my future and the future I'm trying to shape for myself, my wife, my kids. And the more I remember my future, which comes from a place of love and giving back and things like that. And I think, well, that's what I envision. It's like, I think, dream, believe, achieve.
You know? Mm.
That's it. Yeah, no? So that's just the way I think. And not everyone thinks like me, but.
No, it's good, man. It's beautiful. But then that's one thing too. I heard this saying the other day and I love it now. And it's basically the story of the wind. It's about change. So it's about, this is the wind. I don't know if you've heard it before. This is the sun, right? And the wind is going to the sun. And he's going, I'm way better than you. I'm better than you. Look, I'm going to show you how much better I am. And the sun's just like, all right, okay. And basically, he goes, I'm going to point down to this guy down in the road there. And he goes, I'm going to prove to you I'm better than you by blowing his jacket off him. So he goes, oh, son's like, okay. So the wind goes, blows the guy, and the jacket gets loose, but he just holds onto the jacket. And he goes, he gets frustrated because the jacket doesn't come off. The next thing then, he blows even harder. So the guy just zips his jacket up and just puts his arms up like this. So then the son goes, all right, mate, you've had enough now. It's my turn now. Basically, the son just bees the son and just gets the day, brightens the day up, warms the day up, and he gets hot and bothered, takes his jacket off. So to lead change, it's not actually by telling someone change. It's actually by action it in yourself and just being the best version of yourself every day and leading with that. And then, because I was always like that. Oh, people think I'm weird because I'm not the rugby guy anymore. I'm this guy now and inquisitive. And I was like, no, like be comfortable again in who you are and don't try and change people, but just lead by how you want to be in life. And I got advised that by a guy called Luke Archer in Australia. And when he said, just be yourself.
Nobody else can be you and you can't be nobody else.
And it was powerful, man. That story is pretty cool. When I heard it, I was like, wow, it's so simple, but so true. Yeah. Lead, just be yourself. And that's the thing about, I don't know, it's maybe again goes back to rugby, but so many people are just the lads, you know, they don't actually know themselves without the lads. Yeah. But yeah, man, I'm really grateful for you coming on. And I know I could talk, I got so much more to talk about, but I know we're pushing for time, but it's, I want to ask you a couple other things actually, but that's more out of your whole career, reflecting back on it. Are you proud of yourself?
I wasn't for a while. I felt like I could have done more, could have played more rep games, I probably didn't feel like I lived up to my potential. But in probably the last 18 months, 2 years, I've been like, yeah, I really am. Because my career was meant to happen the way it did. And I can honestly say and look myself in the mirror and say, you had a good crack.
Wow.
You achieved your childhood dream of playing in the NRL. You did everything you wanted to, by one or two things. But does that make your career a failure? No, it doesn't.
No.
So, yeah, I am very proud of myself and very grateful for the opportunities that rugby league gave me and the mates I met, the moments, like there's moments that I'll never forget. Even though I've been hit in the head way too many times, I can still turn on the YouTube or whatever and have a look, you know. Yeah, so, yeah. For me, yeah, I am.
It was great to watch you play, man, and never know, Swinton might be looking for a play if you want to come play championship for the year, mate.
Hey, I'm told you, I'm out.
What's the goal? Is it your son plays football?
Yeah, so my son, he plays for Liverpool in football at the moment.
Wow. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's cool, mate. I love watching his journey. I love watching him challenge himself and work hard and chase his dreams now. So he had his first beep test the other week, and I said to him before, I said, just think to yourself, just one more run. Just one more run. That's all you have to think. Ended up winning it. So I was proud of him. He got 12-4.
Wow.
At 12. I was like, on my best day, I would have got 12. Little shit.
Wow, he's a competitor.
So he did well. Yeah, so he did well. Yeah, and look, I don't know much about football, but I know what it's like to be an athlete. And I've just, if you ask for advice, I'll give him it. But I never say, you need to do extra training, you need to do that. But if he comes to me, I'll give him everything I have. But I'm not going to force him to do it because I've had my career. It's his time now.
It's his time. Yeah. That's true. That's so cool, man. And to have that message from a dad's pretty powerful too. Moving forward, you got a podcast. What's it called?
The Other Side of Success. It's cool, man. Like, I love just talking and sharing stories. And like I said in the message, just in my blood, sharing. So, yeah, man, we'll have to have you on that. Reciprocate the favor.
Please, man. I'd love to.
Yeah, but... yeah, I'm always trying to find ways to express my creativity. And, you know, before I came here, I was writing a talk that I was sort of coming up with called You Versus Success. And I was just writing shit and just expressing myself a bit. And I find now I'm not in the footy environment. I'm more comfortable with that. You know, I'm sort of more comfortable being a bit more creative and, just get stuff out that probably wouldn't normally get out if I was still in that environment.
Do you think the footy environment made you hold back?
Yeah, definitely.
Just the fear?
Not in a negative way, but I just think in the way of I had a persona and a stereotypical image that I had to uphold. you know, it's a tough sport played by tough men.
Yeah.
And if I was writing potentially, you know, a script for a movie and it wasn't as hard as or as tough as it's probably the stereotypical view of a rugby player would be, then I'd be like a fake. I'd feel like a fraud. Mm. So, yeah, I definitely feel – plus the boys' banter, far out, you'd get copper hammering. but, yeah, I used to cop and I used to give it out and I loved it. Mm-hmm. There's always that fear of the boys judging you and the boys giving you shit.
Of course.
You know, your peers who you respect and love and they love and respect you, but it's like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? So, yeah, look, I feel like a lot freer not being in that environment. I've missed it like hell. I miss the boys, but I feel a lot freer.
Nice, man. Well, man, I'm grateful for having you on here and I love sharing stories and I'm excited for all the things you've already done and some more because there's probably another 10 other things that's coming.
His brain, man, never stops. But
it's beautiful.
That's one thing I'm trying to harness is focus, you know. I don't like to say a jack of all trades, master of none.
You could be a master of all.
That's what I say. I'm a master of being a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to do now.
You are, man. You can do it all. You can talk. You can do the footy. You can do acting. Mate, I'm the king of that. We're the king of talking that. But the last thing, man, before we wrap up, is I always ask my guests, what are you grateful for?
I think first and foremost, my health.
Mm.
Without that, nothing really you can do. I do gratitude in the morning. I always do three things for myself and then three things externally. So I'll just go off this morning. My health, my ability to provide, and then my ability to protect.
Beautiful, man.
And then I'm grateful, obviously, for my wife and my kids. I'm grateful for my challenges. Grateful to be here with you now.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, look, life can be hard, but embrace that shit. And we all have to go through hard times. We all have to struggle.
Mm.
But I generally feel like it makes you better. It makes you stronger. And while you're in it, it sucks and you're like, fuck this. You come out the other side and you're like, fuck you, I did it.
Yeah,
sorry
man.
For swearing, but I get passionate because it's hard.
Oh,
life's
good.
Hard
it's
and
good.
Life kicks you in the teeth, especially when you don't expect it, but it'll roundhouse you square in the fucking head.
Mm.
And then you've just got to go, is that all you've got?
Yeah, yeah, 100%, man.
Keep going.
Love it, brother. Thank you so much for being on. It's been awesome.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, bro.
Just talk it, walk it. Walk it's only. Don't just talk it, walk it.